G3. The Model of Being and Its Universal Laws. Number 10b.
Cybernetics comes from the Greek and means steering, governing. So it's the science of steering and governing. And Mrs. Eddy has already seen that we should not interfere with cybernetics, with governing, with the regulator. You know, the very first mechanical application of cybernetics was at the time when nobody knew what cybernetics is and was not talking about cybernetics. Cybernetics is a term that was coined in the middle of the 1940s by Wiener. But long before that, the mechanical application was well known, and I think it's called the regulator or governor in a steam machine.
Governor.
Others, I think, called it regulator. That was a self organizing system that kept the pressure of the steam. You correct me, Cecil, if I say something wrong. That kept the pressure of the steam within a very small margin of pressure. In a very small margin. Either that governor opened the valve or closed it. And that is what Mrs. Eddy already saw, that there is a divine governor at work. Do you know how she talked about this governor or regulator? She gives a very funny story about it, and that is in miscellaneous writings. And I read you the little story. She says, "My brother was a manufacturer. And one day a workman in his mills, a practical joker, set a man who applied for work in the overseer's absence to pour a bucket of water every 10 minutes on the regulator. When my brother returned and saw it, he said to the jester, 'You must pay that man.'" You see what she was talking. That regulator was anyway working by itself. It doesn't need any attention. But the joker said to a man who he employed, he said, "Well, what you should do, that regulator works properly, you should put every 10 minutes some water on that regulator." That was naturally not necessary. He only made a mess of it. So she says, some people try to tend folks. They do. As if they should steer the regulator for mankind. God makes us pay for tending the action that he adjusts. So he said, God is the regulator, and he regulates everything by himself. And we don't have to interfere and to adjust his regulator. Just as the joker did when he said, "You pour some water on that regulator," which was of no avail, only made a mess of it. The regulator is governed by the principle that makes the machinery work rightly. See, it's a regulator that is self-regulating the machine. That's the point. That does not need to be attended so that it works regularly. It is self-regulating. And because it is thus governed, the folly of tending it is no mere jest. The divine principle carries on his harmony. So this is giving a sense that Mrs. Eddy wants to bring out. Look here, God is a cybernetic system. It is self-organizing, self-controlling, self-regulating, and you don't have to interfere with it. In another little paragraph, she says something similar, not very similar, but about the regulator. She says, "When mother's love can no longer promote peace in the family, or wisdom is not justified of her children, when depraved reason is preferred to revelation, error to truth, and evil to good, and sense seems sounder than soul, The children are tending the regulator. They are indeed losing the knowledge of the divine principle and rules of Christian Science, whose fruits prove the nature of their source. A little more grace, a motive made pure, a few truths tenderly told, a heart softened, a character subdued, a life consecrated, would restore the right action of the mental mechanism and make manifest the movement of body and soul in accordance with God, instead of relying on the principle of all that really exists to govern his own creation. Self-conceit, ignorance, and pride would regulate God's actions. Experience shows that humility is the first step in Christian Science, wherein all is controlled, not by man or laws material, but by wisdom, truth, and love. It's not always easy to follow me when I read something in my English, but you could hear the tonality of it. Archie brings out here in this story again that God governs his universe himself, and that we shouldn't interfere with our wisdom, with our self-will, and with our conceit, and etc., that we should rely on that divine principle which governs his universe by himself. This is the cybernetic law, that we really should let God do his own work and not try to play God ourselves. Yes, we come to the last criterion, namely to evolution, which I have already touched on, and then aim and meaning, namely the divine principle, love. I have to explain that. The old science, I have said many times, I can't repeat it too often, did not accept the idea that science would have an aim, would have to make sense, would be moral, would be ethical, and should not have a purpose. It is without all these qualities. And only then is it free from any subjective factor. That's old science. Now, our age has suffered very much under this sense of old science, because we have seen how material science has brought forth the atom bomb, which is really constantly hanging over us. We never know if by error or by will or by any other coincidence, by somehow a computer that doesn't work properly or anything, that there is always a possibility that the whole earth is blown up with all mankind. That's the fruit of old science. Because one could practice old science without purpose, without that it had to make sense, without that it had to have a moral or ethical value. Now, the moment we come to new science, it isn't so that we say, well, the new science should have a high aim, should have moral, ethical values. That isn't the question. The question is much more wonderful than that. It shows that if we have the basis, the true basis of a holistic science, that that basis in itself has ethical values, that it is directed to a high aim, that it has in itself a high purpose. Because we have seen what? Through the cybernetic law, we have seen that that science works so that it is always spiraling upward and upward, that it brings forth evolution towards an optimum. Cybernetics, as we'll see, is that which always optimizes and not minimizes. It's not entropical. It's cybernetical. It's evolutive. So that actually science in itself suddenly is an ethical science. This impresses me. Not that good people come along and say, well, the scientists that are working in science, they really should be good people, and they really should only work on those experiments that are ethical, that are human and humane. It isn't that way. Can you see what, can I bring out what I want to say? That the new science in itself cannot help but be good. Because it is bringing out always a higher aim, and we have seen that higher aim of holism is holism. To be whole, to be all, to be the all in all. And so we can see that in this science, everything drives towards a far aim, namely what they call to has a principle that aims towards the point of love, of all is one. Love is only a symbol for what? For saying all is one. So we must be clear that when we call the divine principle love, that with the term love we don't combine a human sense of loving people, of being loving to other people, of having a loving attitude. That's not love with a capital L. Love with a capital L has quite a different connotation. And I always try, in many of my recent summer school, I always try to bring out what the principle that is called love really implies. It is a principle. It's not a human sense that is overformed to a very great sense of loving. That's not love with a capital L. When we study Mrs. Eddy's work and study what she says about the synonymous term love, she brings out that the principle that is called love means that principle is never without its idea, is never without the idea manifested. Not a principle that has an idea, but principle love means that it is principle that cannot be otherwise than that it is manifested already in its infinitude of ideas. Can you see the spiritual impact on our consciousness? That if we accept really the cybernetic law, which as a first step tells us, come on, old man, don't be afraid. Everything is always working for the good. Whatever happens, it can only work for the good, because that's the law of God. It can only work in the line of optimizing the good, and always only in the way of minimizing more and more what is called evil or matter or error. That's cybernetic, which means that it optimizes to the final point, to the maximum. There is always for every stage an optimum, but for the final stage there is a maximum. Optimum, maximum are not the same terms. Which says the maximum is, namely that holistic sense, which says because there is only one, therefore the divine principle is always manifested already. You cannot expect that principle will manifest itself. It is manifested. So it demands from our consciousness a completely different attitude, which goes out into the world and sees that love is never without its manifestation. Can we go out into the world in that way? Or go we out into the world and say, yes, Christian Science teaches that God is love, so God will take care of us. That's not the principle love. That is a nice sense of love, but not the principle called love. The principle called love says you know already that love is always manifested. Always manifested. That love can never be without its objectification. That love can never be separate from its manifestation. That's impossible. That's the principle love. That love is always wedded to its own spiritual idea. It never says that love is now a fiancé and perhaps it's going to marry the idea. Hopefully they will marry. The love is always wedded to its own idea. Wedded means united, not in the future. It's now. That love never loses sight of loveliness. Do we have that consciousness? You see, this is the principle we study. It's a principle we study for 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years. It's in the textbook. But we didn't take care of it. We didn't do it. We read it and said, it's nice. And then we turned away and we didn't do it. I can't say I did it. I just can't say it. I know it, that it is so. And if I sit back and get quiet within myself, and that's important to do it, and quiet within myself, so I say, now, come on, old boy. Come on. Now, put yourself straight. How can it be possible that God is unexpressed? This is absolutely impossible. This is just the fact about it, and if I don't believe it, then I attribute to reality something which reality doesn't have. So, love is wedded to its own spiritual idea. It never loses sight of loveliness. Its halo rests on its object. Do we let the halo of love always rest on every situation, on every political situation, on every person, on everything that concerns our life? Do we let the halo of love rest on its object? If we don't do it, and mostly we don't do it, we know we are not Christian scientists. We are just believers in Christian science. But how long are we going to believe in Christian science? One gets old after a while and says, what have I done in my life? Why have I not been strict about that principle? Why didn't I follow the rules? In arithmetic, I had to do it right from the first day on, or I would have been, I couldn't do anything in this world. I wouldn't get the job in this world. Not even the least job I would get without sticking to the rules of arithmetic. So we did stick to it. Why didn't we stick to the rules of science? The rule of science says that love's halo rests on its object. That divine love cannot be deprived of its manifestation or object. It cannot be deprived. It cannot be separated from it. But all our desire and all our longing is that they will be one day. Can you see? We are always running against science. This is the this is the tragedy that we, with all our heart, we want to be Christian science, and with all our heart, we are going against it. This is a tragedy. But it's good to be honest with oneself and see where we are. Then we know where we should put, where our heart should be, where we have to correct ourselves, where we have to watch our consciousness, our attitude, our feeling. We have to watch it so that we don't bypass constantly the real object. In the law of love, nature and God are one. They are one. We always would like to demonstrate that they are one. But if we like to demonstrate that they are one, we believe that they are not one. So we go out from a false basis that they are separate and say, well, with Christian science, if I work very hard, they become one. They will never become one. They are one. We have made that line of demarcation, that separation between God and man, between subject and object. Can you see how I started out this week by showing how little by little new science has broken down that artificial wall that separated the subject from the object, that wall does not exist in reality. We have made it. We have built it up. We are to be blamed for it. And so we have to tear down that barrier. Did I somehow bring out that sense of holism as the true aim of the whole science that is evolving? Can you see if we look back on it? I wonder if I can bring it out rightly. But if we look back on it, we have seen that all these criteria are all holistic. We have seen the elements are holistic because they are ideas. They are the ideas of God. They are not our ideas, what we think out ideas might be. The categories were holistic. They were the categories of the capitalized terms. Therefore, of God, categories of God, the big ontological categories of being. The system is holistic because it is only composed of holistic categories. That system can be used for restructuring, and every time we restructure, we see that wholeness from a different angle. Then we see different structures, like the structure of prayer or the structure of atonement and Eucharist or of marriage, an idea, a structured idea, always as a holistic idea. It's always the whole. If we have the chapter on prayer, that is not as isolated part that has nothing to do with God. It's always to do with the whole. And so we have seen that these structures have within themselves the creative ability to overstructure themselves, to create higher structure, more complex structure of wholeness, so that we had a dimensional sense of structures, levels of science. And finally, we could see that within those levels of science, there is a dynamic, a working going on, namely laws that are cybernetic, that are not laws of cause and effect, which never leads anywhere, which is always static, which never evolves anything, but really a cybernetic law that is always direct towards the whole, that always serves to attain a goal that is the whole, and that whole is the meaning of the whole, that the whole says, all the meaning I have is to be whole. So that divine principle is love with a capital L. And in this way, I hope to give you a sense of what Christian Science really is. And so that she says, well, mind is all with a capital A, and matter is naught. You see the all and the naught as the leading factor in mind science. Again, out of the sixth chapter. That was her discovery, she said. I discovered what? That mind is all and that matter is naught. That there is evolution and that there is entropy for error. Naught. But we also must see that in this chapter she makes a very critical remark and says, but the mission of Christian Science now, as in the time of its earlier demonstration, is not primarily one of physical healing. She indicates, don't stay on the level of Christian Science. The purpose and aim of Christian Science is to spiral us up out of the level of Christian Science, to absolute Christian Science, divine science, and science itself. That's the purpose. And if we don't have that aim, that goal, that meaning in view, you will find out that Christian Science doesn't work anymore, or works every year worse and worse and less reliably. That's what you see. And that's what happened. That's what happened. Because the Christian Scientist was somehow mesmerized into staying on the level of Christian Science. Always healing, healing, healing. Now, that's difficult for me to say. It's very difficult for me to say, because I have not said that healing is not necessary. So don't go home and say, Max said healing is not necessary. Healing is necessary, but it's only one level. That's not the whole of Christian Science. And she said, what now is necessary, she says, is not primarily, not primarily, one of physical healing. Is healing the sick the whole of science, she asked. She says, healing physical sickness is the smallest part of Christian Science. So we make a small part of holism. We split holism into parts if we think healing is the most important thing. It isn't. It is only the bugle call to thought and action in the higher range of infinite goodness. See, the higher range of infinite goodness. The emphatic purpose of Christian Science is the healing of sin. Well, with sin, she doesn't mean moral sins. With sin, she means to be separated from God, to have as one's principle, not love. Principle love is that which heals sin, which heals our sense of being separate from God. That is it. Don't forget it. Don't forget it. Specialization, Schrödinger has already said, is something that leads to stagnation. And if we are specializing the discovery of Mrs. Eddy to physical healing, the movement has to stagnate and go back. That's the law. And you know now why it has gone back. Okay? Tomorrow we go on with another subject.